Atava Deva Maya Ya. Nunam Gatir Agochara. Sheta So Vachasas Chapi. Bhutanam Iti Nishchayaha. Thus, it is concluded that the Lord's energies are inconceivable. No one can estimate them by mental speculation or by word jugglery. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A question may be raised as to why a devotee should refrain from identifying an actor, although he knows definitely that the Lord is the ultimate doer of everything. Knowing the ultimate doer, one should not pose himself as ignorant of the actual performer. To answer this doubt, the reply is that the Lord is also not directly responsible, for everything is done by His deputed Maya Shakti, or material energy. The material energy is always provoking doubts about the supreme authority of the Lord. The personality of religion knew perfectly well that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, and still he was put into doubts by the deluding energy, and thus he refrained from mentioning the Supreme Cause. This doubtfulness was due to the contamination of both Kali and the material energy. The whole atmosphere of the age of Kali is magnified by the diluting energy, and the proportion of measurement is inexplicable. Maharaj Parikshit is a great realized devotee. Throughout his life, in the association of great souls, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the truth is revealed from within the hearts of those whom Krishna is pleased with. There is no other access to the highest truths. Even the study of the authorized scriptures, although the truth is very clear by the Lord's words, to understand properly can only come when the Lord within our heart is pleased with our sincerity, and He reveals the truth of those scriptures. When one becomes a humble servant of the great souls, and one sincerely wants to commit his life to the loving service of the Lord, then Krishna reveals the most sublime truths of the Vedas. So Maharaj Parikshit, he was such a servant of the Lord. Although he was a king living in great majesty, he had no attachments to anything but the Lord and his devotees and devotional service. And this was, of course, proven later on in his life when he was cursed to die within 7 days, he was not in any regret for losing all of his property, his family, or his very life. But he was in regret that he offended a great soul. This was his only regret. I have offended a great Vaishnava. I have offended a Rishi. That is sad. Why I did, I do not even know. Some inconceivable arrangement of the Lord. That is sad. To die is not a sad thing. To lose my family, to lose all of my wealth and power. He was trained up for so many years to be a good king. All that training is no longer of any avail, military, political training. To lose is not a loss. This is the nature of such a great soul, because he understood that the real treasure of value is association with the Lord's devotees, to hear and chant the glories of the Lord and worship him in such a way, and to serve the Lord. And therefore, on the bank of Ganga, amongst the great rishis, at the lotus feet of Sri Shukadeva Goswami, he found the ultimate satisfaction of devotional service. So Maharaj Parikshit was truly a Rajarshi, a Raja Rishi. He was a saintly person who was taking the occupation of king. And in previous ages, all kings were supposed to be rishis. They were supposed to be saintly persons. And they were rishis because they were always humbly taking advice and serving rishis. Therefore, they were rishis themselves. If we hear from a Vaishnav and we serve what we hear from a Vaishnav, then we are a Vaishnav. What else is our qualification? We should not think that we are devotees because of some wonderful attribute about ourselves. What is our qualification for being a devotee? Because we are hearing from devotee and we are serving the instruction of a devotee, that makes us a devotee. The qualification is the person we are hearing from, the person we are serving. The qualification is never our own. When we asked Srila Prabhupada, what is our qualification for taking to this highest science of bhakti? And he told us, don't ever think you have any qualification. You have no qualification. I have made your qualification. Because we have been willing to hear from a devotee and serve a devotee, by his mercy, we are to be considered a devotee. In this way, a devotee is never proud. Because to be learned in the scripture, to be very austere, to be able to perform rituals very, very punctually, with great cleanliness. These are not qualifications of devotees. The smarta Brahmins, the Mayavadis, the Karmakandis, they can also perform tapasya. They can also learn scriptures eloquently. They can also perform rituals very nicely. That does not make you a devotee. The only qualification in the eyes of God that makes you a devotee is that you are willing to hear from a devotee and follow his instructions and serve him. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshanaha. Just try to learn the truth. The process of truth is only one way. Not by reading scripture. The way of learning the truth is to read the scripture under the guidance, by hearing from spiritual master, by inquiring submissively, and rendering service to him. When you are a servant of a devotee, you are a devotee. There's no other way of being a devotee except being servant of a devotee. And what is our qualification? That he is allowing me to serve him. That's all. And this type of humble consciousness will keep us always fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And when we are fixed at those lotus feet, there is nothing to fear. There is no reason to be in anxiety, because ultimately, by the grace of Guru and the Vaishnavas, we are under Krishna's personal potency. He is protecting us. He is watching over us from within and without. As the Paramatma, in and between every atom and within everybody's heart, he is personally watching over us and making sure just what we need for our spiritual progress will take place. And in this way, Maharaj Parikshit is very much admiring the cow and the bull, because they are not seeing that anyone is the cause of their sufferings. It was explained in the previous verse that one who behaves sinfully and causes another person suffering, that person has to suffer reaction. But then the cow and bull explained, dharma, bhumi, that one who sees that that person is sinful and causing me suffering, that identification that that person is the cause implicates the identifier with the same sinful activities. As has been explained many times, when you see faults in others, your heart becomes contaminated by those faults. Fault finders are always polluted people, whatever they wear, whatever they call themselves. When you criticize others and look at faults and find faults, those same faults come into your own heart. When you see good qualities in others, then those good qualities come into your own heart. So if we want to make spiritual advancement, we should always be looking for the good in others. Now here it is explained that dharma, even though he was being beaten with stick by Kali — who is this Kali? The lowest, worst rascal, the cause of all rascaldom. He was a cruel, low-class person dressed as a royal, great leader, ruler, king. He was an impostor. And he was, for no reason, causing such violence to religion itself. And although Kali was standing there with a stick, with his cruel eyes glaring at the bull, with his three legs practically broken, standing there, crying, trembling, urinating. And Maharaj Parikshit asks,
who has done this to you? And neither the cow or the bull said, this person standing right in front of us, who's holding the stick. Sometimes in court of law, they go through so much effort to try to get some circumstantial evidence that a person is guilty. They have advocates and attorneys and lawyers and so many witnesses and juries, somehow or other, to convince that this person must have done it. But Kali was caught red-handed, as they say. He was right there. He had the stick in his hand. The cow and the bull were personally watching him, beating them and beating them and beating them with harsh, terrible words. And when they were asked, who did it? They didn't even indicate that he was responsible for anything. They began to speak very philosophically. What is the cause of all causes? And they explained through the process of transcendental knowledge how actually the will of the Lord is so inconceivable that we can't think that with our fertile little brains we can understand what's happening and why. When something bad comes to us, why it is happening, even if the person who's doing it to you is standing right before you, what he is a messenger of, why the Lord has sent him, what type of karma has created this, we cannot understand. Only a very, very, very shallow, materialistic, ignorant person will say he's the cause. So Dharma and Bhumi were explaining so nicely that the inconceivable arrangements, so many people have their speculations to try to understand why we are suffering. But Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, due to the influence of this deluding energy, and due to the presence of Kali personified right in front of the cow and bull, they very accurately explained how we cannot understand the reasons of suffering, how we cannot figure it out by our minds, by our intelligence, or by mental speculation. But they didn't come to the conclusion that every devotee is fixed in. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlava. That Krishna is the cause of all causes. There is no other cause but Krishna. Ultimately, he is the controller of everything that exists. He is the controller of material nature. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains here that simultaneously, although a devotee is always aware that Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes and everything is happening for our purification, still the devotee will discriminate how Krishna is working through his deluding energy and why. Sometimes the great acharyas are very strong in their discrimination. Sometimes so strong that people don't like this. They think, why sadhus are talking like this? Sadhus should just say everything is coming from Krishna and just be happy, peaceful, and just say, you are nice, I am nice, and everything is nice. But we see Madhvacharya, he was like a warrior battling against anything that was not supportive of eternal service to the Supreme Lord. And Ramanujacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met with Prakasananda Saraswati, he could have said, you're all right, I'm all right. Ultimately, Krishna is speaking through you and Krishna is speaking through me, so we are all one.
Lord Chaitanya completely deflated and defeated Prakashananda Saraswati. Although Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the process explained that ultimately Krishna is the cause of all causes. Krishna is the one that sent Shankaracharya. And he quoted those beautiful slokas from the Padma Purana, that Krishna sent Lord Shiva in the form of a Brahman in this age of Kali Yuga to teach a covered form of Buddhism, to delude the atheists. On one level, he was reestablishing the authority of Vedas amongst the atheistic class. And on another level, he was actually creating and propagating a philosophy that would very, very suitably and nicely facilitate the progress of degradation in the age of Kali. So this was his twofold purposes. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains, Krishna is the cause of his philosophy. But then he discriminated. Although Krishna is the cause, it's wrong. And this is why it's wrong. And this is what we must do to defeat it. He identified within this deluding energy how it was taking place and how it could be overcome. But at the same time, never forgetting that Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes. So similarly, when the temple gets dirty, we can say, it's Krishna's arrangement. Krishna's the cause of all causes, so the temple's dirty, so we should be very happy to worship the dirt. And say, if anyone comes, if Guru Maharaj says, the temple is dirty, you say, well, Krishna's the cause of all causes. It couldn't happen without Krishna. This is his house. So yes, we know that Krishna's the cause of dirt. But we also discriminate how through diluting energy, material energy, Krishna is allowing this to happen, and how to discriminate between cleanliness and dirtiness, and how to drive all dirtiness away. So we must discriminate, but we must never, ever, ever forget that ultimately Krishna is the cause. The battle of Kurukshetra. Ultimately, Krishna is in the heart of Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. By their misuse of free will, Krishna allowed them to be greedy rascals. If Krishna did not sanction it, they could not be such cruel, terrible people, trying to kill the Pandavas and cheat them in so many ways. But it is because of their own misuse of independence that Krishna allowed them and empowered them to be so evil. So Krishna is the ultimate cause. But at the same time, we must see how they are being controlled by material nature due to their envious. And therefore there's discrimination he is doing, and this is why he is doing. And Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna in this way. Yes, I'm the cause of all causes. He declares that throughout the Gita, that nothing could happen without his sanction. You must see me in everything and see me everywhere. But at the same time, although that is a fact, through the agency of diluting energy, which is my energy, these men are misbehaving. And you must discriminate. You must discriminate and do the right. And what is the right? To battle against ignorance. Krishna is the cause of ignorance. Krishna is the cause of ignorance, and he tells us to fight ignorance.
So this is real sadhu. Srila Prabhupada was, sometimes people would say, Swamiji, why you are talking like this? At Juhu Beach, he would walk, whenever he was in Bombay, he would take his morning walk up and down beach. And sometimes people would come and join him on the walk and talk to him. One man would always challenge so many ways, present so many Mayavad ideas, so many materialistic scientific ideas, present so many pseudo-religion, religious ideas, and Prabhupada would just smash them to pieces. He would call us cheaters, bluffers, rascals, Mayavadi, so many nice, harsh words he would use. And first, Swamiji, why are you saying like this? Everything is coming from God. Srila Prabhupada taught, yes, Bhagavad Gita, the Kurus came from God, but Krishna said they are wrong, you discriminate why they're wrong, and you destroy them. So we must discriminate. And the testimony of Maharaj Parikshit, this great Mahabhagavat's understanding of this, is he's so pleased that Dharma is not seeing that Kali is the cause of the suffering. He's so pleased to see how a devotee ultimately knows that Krishna is the cause of all causes and does not blame anyone. He just takes everything for his purification. So that's the way we should consider for ourselves. But at the same time, in the verses that are about to come, Parikshit, with this knowledge that Krishna is the cause of all causes and not a blade of grass moves without his sanction, he picked up his sword and he was about to destroy the person with the stick. Dharma and Bhumi didn't even indicate that this Kali had anything to do with their suffering, because they are Vaishnavas. They were saying whatever is coming ultimately is by Krishna's purification. That is Vaishnava's will. But Parikshit Maharaj, knowing that that is true, also knows that you must discriminate. And with that in mind, that Krishna is the cause of all causes, you have to do the will of Krishna. And that is to discriminate. And to do the right thing. So we are asked to associate with devotees. In one sense, you can say anyone who comes to you, Krishna has sent them. If the prostitute comes to you, not a blade of grass, Krishna has sent her. If someone comes with alcohol or cigarettes, Krishna has sent. Not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. If we go home to visit our families and everybody's sitting and watching the television set, we could think, this is Krishna's arrangement. I didn't turn on the television set. And Krishna's in the heart of my family members. So in this way, or devotees, sometimes devotees are gathered together to taste the nectar of describing the faults of other devotees. That is called idle gossip, which steals away all propensities for Krishna consciousness. We hear them, oh, did you hear what this devotee did? Aha, I know a secret. I know things about that devotee that nobody else knows, but I will tell you, if you promise you will not tell anyone that I said it. Like this. So somehow or other we come into the assembly of such devotees, we think this is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna wants me to know all the faults of everybody, how everyone's a hypocrite except the people talking. We must discriminate. We must understand, yes, Krishna's the cause of all these people doing all these things, but as far as you're concerned, Krishna's the cause of testing you. Krishna is the cause of this test
will you sit before the TV and think, ah, Krishna wants me to enjoy? Or will you say, no, I will chant my rounds, I will read Bhagavatam, or I will go to the temple?
So Krishna arranges every situation in our life, but oftentimes these situations are a test. And we have to be philosophically strong enough to discriminate and understand how to pass the test. But at the same time, if we do not recognize that ultimately Krishna is the cause of all causes, and this is all meant for my purification, then you cannot properly discriminate and pass the test. Sometimes devotees in their practical activities, they have a difficult time making this balance. For example, a manager. To be a manager in Krishna consciousness means you have to make so many discriminations. This is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. This should be done, this should not be done. It must be like this. This person must go, this person should stay. This is management. If you just say, everything's coming from Krishna, then you'll just let everything happen. Srila Prabhupada didn't like that type of management. He was very harsh and strong. In Vrindavan, if they did not ring the bell the exact amount of times as the hour of the day, on the second, when the second hand touched the 12, he would chastise. So one may say, this is Vrindavan. This is the place of Raga Bhakti. The place beyond rules and regulations. Not only that, it is the place beyond time. It is the Nitya Dham, the eternal abode, where time is conspicuous by its absence. And we like this philosophy. So if time is conspicuous by its absence, and it is the timeless land of no time, then why we have to watch the second hand and ring the bell? Because in our hearts we must understand this, but at the same time in our devotional service we must be very, very efficient, very intelligent, very conscientious. Now someone who becomes so much absorbed in the managerial aspect, they start seeing everything mundane, and they forget that Krishna is the cause of all causes. And ultimately, they start thinking that they are the cause of all causes. That because of me, this temple is so clean. And because of me, the brahmacharis are so staunch. And because of me, the world is turning. In this way, they forget that Krishna is the cause of all causes. And when problems come, they just become completely enmeshed in the problem. And it causes them so much anxiety and so much frustration. So you have two choices when a problem comes that's just a terrible problem that nobody wants to deal with, but you are selected to do it. The two choices are to just... There's three choices, actually. There's probably more than three choices, but in general. One is we can just get so absorbed in trying to solve this problem that we just get so absorbed in all the material, discriminatory considerations of this problem that we just become contaminated by all of our material conceptions. Two is we just say, Krishna is the cause of all causes, so just Let it happen.
Why should I deal with it? I'm a sadhu. And three is the Krishna conscious way of doing it. That is to go through the struggle of using your intelligence to discriminate, to make everything as best as possible, but always ultimately to understand that Krishna is the cause of all causes, and why this is happening and how this is happening. It is all meant for my purification, and the purification comes when I solve the problem according to my intelligence and capacity in the service of Krishna. It's for my purification, so I must do the work. That's my purification. But I must see it coming from Krishna ultimately. That is Krishna consciousness. So this is very, very important. In any service, when we have to deal with practical considerations, the tendency is to be artificially renounced and think, why should I work so hard for this? Ultimately, Krishna is the controller. This is all temporary. And the other extreme is we just get so absorbed in the mundane details of the problems that we just start thinking that this is the all in all. And we forget that Krishna is sending it by his mercy as a test for me to become purified by serving, by performing the service. In this way, we can work with great intelligence, with great discrimination, with tremendous energy, and at the same time be detached. And remember Krishna. This is the teachings of Gita. This is Bhagavad philosophy. So Srila Prabhupada and the great acharyas, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, they were very, very strong. Who is right? Who is wrong? Who is good? Who is rascal? The word rascal, very strong word. But Prabhupada chose the strongest possible words. He's so gentle, so loving. But when he would talk about atheists, he would say, I kicked their face with my boot. But Vrindavan Das Thakur also did that. Chaitanya Bhagavat. He says, anyone, when Nityananda Prabhu would perform very, very mysterious, extraordinary pastimes, he says again and again, anyone who thinks that Nityananda Prabhu is an ordinary person, or anyone who criticizes him, I kick them in the head with my foot. Now, is that the way for a sadhu to talk? Yes, definitely. Why would he do like this? Why are you angry, kicking head? And the learned devotees explain, what does he mean? He's actually merciful. Why does a merciful person kick someone? And he said, because this person's criticizing Lord Nityananda and the Vaishnavas, they don't have any mercy. But if I kick that person in the head, then Lord Nityananda Prabhu will see, oh, my devotee's kicking him in the head. I should be very merciful to that person getting kicked in the head. In this way, he's actually doing it for that person's benefit, knowing that by doing so, it will attract the mercy of Lord Nityananda upon him, which is his only saving grace. So we should know that actually Srila Prabhupada had unconditional, unalloyed love for Charles Darwin. He had unconditional love for, I don't even want to mention all the names of the people that he spoke very strongly toward. various, all the bogus gurus, all the atheistic scientists, all the rascals. He had love for them. He had compassion for them. He understood that there was a disease that they were covered by. And he also understood that although he was obviously praying for the mercy of the Lord to cure them of the disease, he did not want others to be contaminated by that disease. Therefore, out of love and affection to protect the innocent, he discriminated. When a doctor goes into a place where there's an epidemic, he has to point out what the disease is and how you contract it and how to stay away from it. He can't say, this is a very nice place, everything's very nice. The doctor is not effective that way. If there's a cholera epidemic, the doctor comes in and says, actually, this is all the will of the Lord, it's very nice. Just go on with your life. If you live, if you die, it doesn't matter. On one level, yes, you must think like that. But on another level, if it is the will of the Lord. But the will of the Lord is you have the choice to live and go back to Godhead or die and take another birth. That's the will of the Lord. So we have to discriminate on how to understand the will of the Lord and how to benefit. So this is the cause of the disease, this is the carrier of the disease, and this is what we must do to that carrier of the disease. That is love. That is compassion. This is a very wonderful verse that we are reading today. Thus it is concluded that the Lord's energies are inconceivable. No one can estimate them by mental speculation or by word jugglery. We can only understand the inconceivable energies of the Lord by hearing submissively from the Lord's devotees. And in this way, we do the needful. We perform our service to make everything efficient and to do the best benefit for all. But at the same time, never forgetting Krishna is the cause of all causes. Whatever suffering is coming upon me, a devotee knows Krishna is giving it to me for my purification. But we also must discriminate. If a devotee does something wrong and the reaction is suffering, the devotee, yes, Krishna is giving me this as a purification, but I'm also should discriminate to not do that wrong thing again. Or even the great souls, they do not do anything wrong, and still they suffer. For them, in a humble position, they understand that Krishna has a cause, he has a reason, either for my purification or for the purification of others, but Krishna has his reason. And in this way, keeping this proper balance of always remembering Krishna as the cause of all causes, and learning how to perform devotional service by discriminating to understand how to reciprocate and serve him under the situation that he is personally and directly putting us under. Is there any questions? Yes. He is very, very vital. A manager in Krishna consciousness, we have seen at one time one of the most tremendous, empowered, exemplary managers in Krishna consciousness. He was able to just motivate people and mobilize people and discriminate. He was doing wonderful. But he got so caught up day and night, he was just constantly thinking about solving the managerial problems. And he didn't take it very seriously to chant his 16 rounds. Why? Because he was so busy. There were so many problems. And he was so expert that nobody could solve them as good as him. So during japa period, when everyone else was chanting japa, he was on the phone or talking to people, solving the problems. And during Srimad Bhagavatam, when devotees were supposed to be sitting and hearing the words of Srila Prabhupada and Sukadeva Goswami, he was very busy going place to place, making the organizational arrangements so that everything goes smoothly. And he was fantastic. But after some time, he became such a manager that he lost his connection to Krishna. And then he couldn't manage anything. So we should know that we have to perform our duty with great, great attention, with great, great care and enthusiasm. But in order to keep the balance so that we never forget that Krishna is the cause of everything, that we never forget how and why we are doing what we are doing and for who, we must chant our 16 rounds attentively every day. We must hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita every day. And that is the practical way in which Srila Prabhupada has given us to balance our life. Grihasthas, they have so many considerations of this world. The Kurma Brahma met Lord Chaitanya and decided, forget this wife and children. Too much mental anxiety. I will go with you and become sadhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no need. You go home. Go home means what? Go home means you have to, somehow or other, you have to make sure your children are with good people and not bad people. Somehow or other, you have to put them through school. Somehow or other, you have to have money. Somehow or other, you have to make your house livable. So many thoughts. So many decisions. That's grihastha life. You cannot avoid it. And you have to be responsible and do it. But if you chant your 16 rounds every day, you keep nice association with devotees, you hear from Guru, you read Srimad Bhagavatam, and you'll do your duty, you'll do it right, but you will understand how ultimately Krishna is the cause of all causes. Krishna is the one that's putting me in this situation. If I lose everything, if I gain everything, I deal with it according to the need, but I'm not attached. Because if I just do it with Krishna consciousness, with faith in Krishna, I know that I'm making spiritual progress. It's all happening for my purification. And if we understand like this, we can be effective, efficient, and we'll never be in anxiety. We'll never be frustrated. We will be blissful, chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Managerial, so to say, activities, Krishna consciousness, there is always a struggle in our mind that some duties and some responsibilities or some authorities has been given to you, and you have to go on discriminating what is right, what is wrong. And we have been trained in that way that whatever spiritual advancement we have done, it is only by the mercy of the devotees. And always that fear is there that if I try to discriminate, and by discriminating I might not be knowing this devotee's full heart and soul, what is he thinking? And if I offend him by doing something, by doing the discrimination, my spiritual life will be completely spoiled off. I'll be nowhere somewhere. So that fear, because of that fear, we are so fearful that we are not able to take any decisions at all. So in that circumstances, what should we do?
You should not take part in any activities that are unfavorable for devotional service, whoever may be inviting you to do so. And we should take part in those activities that are favorable for devotional service. You see, if someone is doing some talking all nonsense or having some sense gratification which is not favorable, we should not find fault with them. We should not criticize them. We should understand that the volume of the goodness in that person, just the fact that he's a devotee, is millions of times greater than the mistakes that they're making. So we have to see that. Sometimes devotees gossip. We shouldn't think, oh, they're not devotees or they're rascals. We should think they're wonderful souls, but somehow or other they're doing like this. But I'm not such a wonderful soul, so I should not do like this. They might be wonderful. Just like if your brother or if your son has a disease, if you come close to the son in such a way that you catch the disease, what will that do for you? So you have to keep your distance, but still, he's your brother, he's your son, so there's love. We should help our loved one overcome the disease. We shouldn't become part of the disease. Hate the sin, but don't hate the sinner. Devotee hates no one. As I said, Prabhupada, the people he spoke against, he didn't hate them. He was not antagonistic toward them. He loved them. He knows they're part and parcel of Krishna. But he understands that the disease they have is causing them suffering, and he was trying to warn us that we should not also become contracted by that disease and suffer. So devotees are never fault finders. If we mark something that's wrong out of discrimination, it's out of compassion, it's out of concern, it's in a mood of service. It's never in a mood of envy. Never destructive. So yes, you have your weaknesses, I have my weaknesses, they have their weaknesses. So when we see some weakness in another devotee, we should understand that it is very insignificant compared to their goodness. But at the same time, we should not become weakened by associating with their weakness. We should try to help them, and we should protect ourselves. Yes.
I was just talking about the effect of the TV.
I was
just talking about the effect of watching TV. The thing is, when we try to control our children watching TV programs. You know, your god brothers and god sisters always concerned about you. But they just tell you that, you should not control them so much, because when they grow up, they retaliate and they become worse. So it's better you allow them to, watch some, like things like cartoon or something like cricket match, which is not going to affect them so much. So what do you do in such situation?
What to do in such a situation? There are so many things you can do in such a situation. One thing is not to have a TV. That's the easiest thing. Out of sight, out of mind.
The neighbors have, so they go to neighbors' house.
Anyways, what we have to do is try to give them a higher purpose in life and higher activities. The idle mind is the devil's workshop. If we can somehow or other find ways of enthusing our children to be busy and active in nice constructive devotional activities, or activities that are conducive to a higher consciousness, we should always do that, try to fill their lives with nice things. We should do that as far as possible. And if somehow or other they go to the neighbor's house, what to do? The danger of TV is this. Cartoons may be all... Cartoons are mostly violence these days, aren't they? Just people beating each other and smashing each other and eating each other. And, you know, children watch it, and then the children start beating each other and scratching each other and eating each other. Why? Children are so accustomed to fighting, because their innocent little cartoons is mostly just all people beating up on each other, right? I don't know what cartoons you watch. In the West, there's Mighty Mouse, and he's a little mouse, and he's just beating up people all the time. There's these people squashing each other with bricks, and right? They're always fighting and fighting and fighting. And then children, their play is to fight. So the cartoons, if it's actually a nice cartoon about love and devotion, that's very good. But most of them is just all about fighting and violence and envy and all kinds of things. It's presented in an innocent way. Innocent package, but the message is not very innocent. But then, even if it's a very harmless type, which is sometimes there, maybe in India there are harmless, non-violent children's shows or whatever, the danger is once you marry your television, once you develop a consorthood with television set, then the next station and the next program and the next channel, you are subjected to that. You've already found so much interest and pleasure in this tube. Then all these other cable channels and everything else with all these terrible, terrible contaminating influences, you'll become receptive to that as well. You've already surrendered your consciousness to the tube, so whatever the tube says, you will accept. Just like so many devotees I have seen, they say, I have a television just to watch the news. But I've never seen a single one that turns it off after the news. I'm already here, I'm sitting here, the news was good, let's see what else there is. And then when it starts, we become mesmerized by the power of Maya, which is so strongly manifesting through this medium. So it's not very good. Television is, you know, I have heard this and I agree. What the Muslims, under Muslim rule for about 800 years, they were not able to destroy the spiritual culture of India. British rule for about 200 years, they were not able to really destroy the spiritual culture in India. But in about 10 years, American and European television is completely destroying the spiritual culture of India. And that is a fact. When the British and the Muslim were conquering and controlling and discriminating and persecuting, somehow or other, the Hindus remained strong. But when they turn on the television, they sell out all their values. Worse than the Mughal Empire, more dangerous than the German Empire, more dangerous than the British Empire, is that innocent little tube sitting in your home. It's completely destroying the very fiber of the heritage and the spiritual culture of this entire land. More than anything else, and day by day, every day, it is destroying more of the culture of India than all these other foreign conquerors did in centuries. And that is a fact. So once we accustom ourselves to the innocent parts, it's like the head and the tail of a coin. It's hard to take the head and not the tail. It's hard to watch the good shows and not the bad shows. And even the good shows, oftentimes they have so many subtle influences. So Mahabharata, Ramayana, some show about yatras to Badrinath, they may be nice, but just the consciousness of finding pleasure through that medium, or finding enlightening through that medium, is very, very dangerous. Because once Maya traps you through that medium, she gets so many polluted influences will come into your life. So what to do with children in this age of Kali Yuga, where all these influences are all around? Obviously you cannot beat them and punish them every time they want to watch a cartoon. But you can, in your own home, not make the facility available, and try to explain to them as best as possible the dangers, and try to engage them in so many wonderful, wonderful activities. But that may mean you have to spend a lot of time with them. Usually when parents neglect the children and don't have time for them, then they have to do something, so they just watch television. But if the parents are taking them somewhere or doing this with them or something, then they don't have so much need. But once they're addicted, then it's very difficult. It's an addiction. It's an infatuation. I've seen in the West, I would be safe to say that television has broken more families than anything else. People have no communication with each other. When they're eating dinner, the television's going, everyone's like... And when dinner's over, people and families don't even know each other in the West. They come home from school, they do their homework, and then as soon as that's done, everyone's just sitting watching the television. Parents don't know their children, children don't know their parents, children don't know their brothers and sisters. All they know is the television. It's the medium. There's no communication. It's tearing families apart, tearing society apart. And why is there so much infatuation towards sex and violence in the West? Because that's all they're watching all day. Whether it's innocent cartoons or whether it's very, very gross other types of programs. They're just watching it all day. And what you associate with, you become. In the West now, there's just such incredible, uncontrollable infatuation towards sex and violence. And gross materialism. Because they're all just being brainwashed by the television sets. And now all those same exact programs that have ruined the Western world is in the living room of almost every house of India. It's the greatest danger of the land. It's Maya in her most penetrating and powerful form. So best not to make friends with Maya. So we should try to protect our children from this influence. But if they see us watching, then they will think, oh, very nice. But if they see we don't watch, and we see, we think it's harmless. That's Maya's power. She makes the most harmful thing seem harmless. If someone gives you food and says, this has poison in it, will you take it? But if someone gives you food and says, this is very good for you, then you'll take it. So anyone who has ever poisoned someone, they'd never disclose the poison. So that's the way Maya works. This is very nice. You will learn so many things. You will get such a broad spectrum of the world and the universe. It will be so good for my educating my children to just know so much about everything and how people think all over the world and what different shows and how people, emotions, so much excitement, so much entertainment, so much fun. But the poison is there. Behind the scene, Maya is trying to steal all of your virtues away. And through the television set, more than any other medium, she has stole the virtues of the whole world. And this is Bharatvarsha. The last hope of the world's spirituality is the sustenance of Vedic culture in India. And it's sad. Sometimes when I'm traveling, we see in the poorest, poorest neighborhoods where people have these little, what kind of houses? I don't even know what they're made. Sometimes they just take these sacks from potatoes and they just wrap them up and find some cans and make them flat. Huh? Vanaspati cans and potato sacks. And they have a little house about this big and they're all living in it on the dirt ground. But what do you see on the roof? Television antenna. You have seen, yes? It's become so much a part of Indian life. Maya, this is the influence of Kali. Television is like this Kali standing with the stick. Same Kali standing with a stick that's beating the legs of the bull has now come in the form of television. He's beating the legs of the bull of religion. He's conquered the world and has now come to conquer the last place, India. And every day, making great strides of progress. So somehow or other, we should have such a wonderful, exciting satsang of Vaishnavas within our homes, within the temple. There is no time or need for these crazy things. When you're in the middle of a wonderful kirtan, you're not thinking, what show is on television? Huh? But when you're just sitting home all alone, doing nothing, then you sometimes, yes. So we have to be very, very busy in Krishna consciousness and give every opportunity to our children. We cannot force them. To some extent, we can try, but we cannot force them. But what we can do is educate them and be a good example for them and try to keep them very, very positively busy in Krishna consciousness. Does that answer your question? It's becoming very late.